Most leaders know that there's a difficult conversation they need to have, but they're just not having it. Bruce Mayhew is my guest today, and he's got two decades helping leaders understand why, and more importantly, what to do about it. Welcome to The Debrief Show, the show for leaders who want to bring out the best in themselves, their teams, and their communications. I'm your host, Dee Clayton. I'm a multi-award-winning executive coach and trainer, and I love to blend insights, discovery, NLP, and motivational maps to help you bring out the best in your people and be really clear and confident and impactful in your communications. My guest today is Bruce Mayhew. He's an author, a trainer, and he's based in Toronto. He helps leaders and teams to build cultures that turn good intentions into everyday behaviors. And his book that he's written is called The Path of an Inspired Leader. And there's a couple of chapters dedicated to difficult conversations in that book. Today, we're talking about difficult conversations, why leaders avoid them, and what the cost of that can be. And this isn't just theory. This is practical steps that Bruce talks about every single day. So let's tune in. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So we're going to talk about difficult conversations. Can you just first explain what you mean by that term?
Sure. Difficult conversations are the uncomfortable conversations that happen, but that are really important. I like to think of difficult conversations as the thing that you and I can talk about every day or once a week when you and I might disagree on something. Or where I've done something that you think might not be aligned with corporate culture or corporate values. But if we sweep them under the rug, if we ignore them, that tension just keeps building and building and building. And then it becomes conflict. Mm-hmm. Then it becomes some big, crucial conversation that you might need to bring in HR or legal, but it's that big picture thing. And I like to have little, you know, like little conversations that build trust, that build cooperation, that build alignment along the way. And those are the difficult conversations that that I like to look at.
And presumably they're more manageable because they're smaller at the beginning.
Absolutely. A lot less tension, a lot less emotion, especially if we have talked in advance and said, hey, Dee, every once in a while, I expect that we're going to disagree. And so I'd like you to come and talk to me about that. Mm. Right. So you give people permission to have that conversation with you. And in reverse, you say, like, is it okay if I bring that up to you as well? And when that happens, when you've created that bubble, that environment where you and I know that we're going to be safe, those conversations can be really, really productive.
And that's a whole nother topic, isn't it? Psychological safety. But let's assume psychological safety here and we can do it. Yeah. Now, before we go into the detail, how did you get into this particular area? Was there something that really called to you about difficult conversations?
It's been part of my journey for sure. I didn't grow up thinking that I wanted to become an expert in difficult conversations and crucial conversations. It sort of wasn't on my vision board. But as I got into leadership and in my banking experience, as I became a leader and a manager in my past life, I realized that these were the things that were part of being a good leader. And I wasn't good at it. I was honestly probably terrible at it. My background, my parents are sort of that English-Irish background. So I don't know if this runs true for you, but the idea was if it's conflict, if it's uncomfortable, you sweep it under the rug. You just don't talk about it, right?
The rug is the best place for anything.
Oh, right? Yeah. And then once a year, like, at home, it would all explode and tears would flow and like all of this would happen. And then, you know, it all settled down and the rug started piling up again. And that was how I was brought up, is to never deal with these uncomfortable situations. And so when I got into banking, I was still really terrible at it. And at the same time, I was now an adult. I was in relationships, you know, and that same thing was happening in my relationships. And like, I can remember a couple times in my relationship where just not being able to have emotionally not be able to have and not know how to have those uncomfortable conversations. And like there was one relationship that is really particular in my mind, where we were both just really bad at communicating. And it was a monumental, terrible ending, not good, you know? And I look back and I think, you know, that could have been very different if I knew at least how to have safe, difficult, uncomfortable conversations without them becoming or being blame or accusation or attack, right? If I could manage that a little bit differently, I think that relationship probably still would have ended, but it wouldn't have been a complete meltdown.
Would have been a bit quieter ending, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, so you mention about parents and our upbringing, and that links really nicely to kind of the monkey stuff that I talk about here. So I talk about mind monkeys that come and chat to us and say you're not good enough or nobody likes you. And a lot of our behaviors, even when we're grown-ups, as you say, come from these things that we learn or didn't learn as children. How does that play out in this scenario of difficult conversations? So our parents might not be very good at role modeling that. And are there other kind of worries we have in our head as to why we don't want to have these difficult conversations?
Sure. And there's all kinds of sort of different monkeys that might be coming up in our minds. And I think what's really important to recognize is that what's coming up for me might be very different than what's coming up for you. And that will be really important in any relationship or in any conversation, is that just because I'm feeling this doesn't necessarily mean that you're feeling this. And so in these difficult conversations, we have to be able to stay aware of what's going on with us, but we also have to stay open enough to recognize that there might be something going on with the other person and that it might be something that isn't even on my radar, right? And so there might be something, whether it's the way that they were brought up within their family, or it could be possibly something that was a cultural impact, right? So something that my religion or my nationality or something along those lines might have been a strong influence in how I deal with hierarchy, conflict, whatever, right? So, you know, it can be a really messy place, right? And we should expect that. But I think the way that we stay safe is that we stay open to recognize this isn't clear cut. This might be messy, and that's okay. But messy is okay, because we're in fact finding mode. We're in creative mode in a way.
Yeah. That's useful. And often people mistakenly think, well, I hate these conversations, so you must too. I also talk about the different color energies, which I'm sure you know about, the different personality styles, and some of the personality styles may be more comfortable at giving really direct and honest feedback. And another personality style might be building up to it for 7 weeks and then finally say, well, I was a little bit upset by that thing you said 7 weeks ago that the other one's completely forgotten about. So there's personality styles, there's cultures, all sorts of other things, aren't there? Just being aware that not everybody is the same is good advice, to think about that and not put my stuff onto you as well. So you were talking about maybe having a conversation before. Let's have a look at, if we are going to have these difficult conversations, let's have a look through the lens of like, what do we do before, what do we do during, and what do we do after? So could you give us some tips or techniques about before we have the conversation?
Sure. I think right out of the gate, I think we should have that conversation saying, hey, Dee, you and I are going to disagree on things from time to time, right? I want to make sure that I'm hearing your opinion every time when you have a thought, an idea, when you disagree with me, when you have a different option for how we're going to go, I want to hear that, right? I might not agree, And it might not be the solution that we go with, but I still want to hear you say that. Right. Mm-hmm. So please stay open. And same thing is that, hey, Dee, there's going to be times that you and I disagree on how something applies to our team values. Right. And I might think that you're outside of those team values, or you might think I'm outside of those team values. Excuse me. And again, I want your permission that you and I can have this relationship where you can talk to me about when you think I'm out of alignment, and I want you to be okay if I can talk to you when I think you might be out of alignment. Yeah. And let's agree that I might be mistaken when I think you're out of alignment, but I still want to have that conversation so that you and I could get on the same page, right? That you and I could stay the best that we can stay.
Right? Mm. I think can you come to my next conversation? And yeah, say that absolutely. For me, please.
yeah. But I think those conversations are really important, right? And I think they're important. If today is my first day at our company, I think you as my new boss should have that conversation with me on day one.
Wow, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Right? That says, hey, Bruce, I think you're going to screw up. Today's your day one. Yeah. You're going to screw up somewhere. Right. And like whatever language you want to use, but you're going to feel confused and not know what to do. I want you to know that you can come to me. Right. And say this. And I want you to feel comfortable when you screw up that I'm going to be here to help you as long as we stay open. Right. So we can do that on day one. We can do that. You can do this today with your existing employees or your existing coworkers, right? And you can even do this if you haven't done this at all yet before, you can do this when you're having a difficult conversation. You have to have a difficult conversation. That could actually be your opening statement, right? Some alignment on that.
Well, at the beginning of the actual conversation. But ideally, we would have done this in advance ideally plenty in advance. I like that first day idea. That'd be amazing. Yeah, that'd be brilliant. Yeah, yeah. Any other techniques or tips about getting ready for the meeting? Or shall we now move on to kind of during the meeting?
Well, if I'm going to have a difficult conversation with you, right, and we have to recognize that some of them are going to be planned, right? So I'm going to go, okay, tomorrow morning, I'm going to have a conversation with D. And right? But the other one might be spontaneous, right? It just might be something that just happens in a conversation between you and I or in a meeting. So some you can plan a little bit ahead. The other is that they're going to be spontaneous, and you really have to be able to know what your purpose is. And I would say that is the great next step, right, is know why you're about to say what you're about to say, right? So if I'm going to say, hey, Dee, I saw you speaking over somebody in that meeting yesterday, and I just want to bring that to your attention because I'm thinking that you didn't notice that you kept cutting Bruce off when he was trying to speak. So I just want to come to that. I just want you to be aware of that because it can really hurt our energy within our team, right? So again, that is a conversation that your focus, your why is creating great energy with the team, not attacking D for speaking over with Bruce, right? The speaking over is just, it's what happened, but the why you're having this conversation is the bigger picture. It's the more important picture, and it allows D to feel safe because it's not about specifically about D. It's about creating this great environment, right? And that I think is an important aspect that we need to make sure that we pay attention to during a conversation, or as we're preparing for that conversation and during, is that we really stay focused on what the big picture is. What's the big goal, right? And the action is just a symptom.
And you were making me feel about emotions then, like if you, because some people's goal unconsciously would be, I want to show that I'm right and you're wrong. And that would be obviously a very bad thing to bring into it. So maybe we talk about the actual, now we're having the actual conversation, we're in the conversation. Maybe you can give us some tips on that. But my first question would be then, what about emotions? How do we not get like, I'm right, you're wrong, one-upmanship, whatever you want to call it?
Sure. The more that, especially if we're able to have that pre-conversation, really helps the emotions in the moment, right? It certainly helps people feel safer in that, in the moment. But if you haven't had that, and it's understandable that some people will feel emotion, right? They'll feel something going on. They might feel scared for their position, right? They might feel threatened. They might feel attacked, right? And just because I feel attacked doesn't mean that you're attacking me. Mm-hmm. It just means that I might be feeling that, especially as the key participant in that difficult conversation. If I'm bringing the conversation to you, I have to stay really aware of the emotion that I'm feeling, but also the emotion that I'm sensing around that room, right? And it really is my responsibility to manage those emotions as best as possible. So first it's self-awareness, right? So realizing when I get triggered, when I get boiled up, and being able to manage those components, but also then using empathy to try to figure out and recognize when things might be going on with the other person. Starting with self, right? It might be that the other person gets triggered and starts screaming or hollering or doing something big. That might be a trigger for me, right? Knowing that it is a trigger for me allows me to not get heated. Like, you'll still feel triggered, but you won't become defensive, right? So you can take a beat and say, okay, Bruce is screaming. Bruce is really angry with this feedback. I'm going, instead of arguing back, I'm going to stay calm as best I can, listen as best I can, and try to watch for the thing that is really triggering Bruce, and then point to that if I possibly can, right? So I'm not going to tell Bruce to calm down, because that would be the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
Right? But I can say, hey, Bruce, I see this is really important to you. That's what I'd like to talk about, is why this is important to you.
Trying to find some common ground, but in the emotion of, without dismissing their feelings. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And let's face it, especially if it's a surprise for the person, they might be inappropriate, right? They might be triggered in ways that they've lost a little bit of control because they're not used to this. Let's not attack them for that, right? Like, if that behavior continues, that's something different. But in that moment, we have to give people a little bit of flexibility to say, they might have a big emotion from this. It's my job to try to bring them back a little bit from that, because most people don't wake up in the morning wanting to go into work or with their partner and have a screaming match, right? Or have this conflict.
Yeah.
So something might be going on with them that we have to be able to stay open to, even though we don't understand it.
And would you ever recommend, like, if it got a bit heated like that, would you say, should we take a break or should we come back tomorrow? Do you ever think that's a good idea? Or is that ducking out again?
Yeah, no. So it's really tricky with that one. I would say let's come back tomorrow would be my absolute last option. But if I'm having this big emotion, or even if I appear to be shutting down completely, because that's equally important, that if I'm shutting down and I'm not sharing and I'm not participating, then it would be okay to say something like, hey, Bruce, I'm sensing that this is really important and maybe a surprise for you, right? Why don't you stay here in this conference room or wherever it might be? You stay here. I'm going to go get us some water. And then I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that'll give us both a break, a beat. It'll give us a spot, a space. So you can name it. Like, you want to take a timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like the word timeout in this environment.
It sounds like you're being told off by a kid.
Yeah. Get in the corner, right? But let's just take a beat. Think through what we talked about so far. I'm going to go get us some water and I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
What you kind of don't want to do is let that person leave.
Right.
Because they might not come back.
Out of the environment, I guess, then when they leave, right?
So they might not come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Because if they leave, their emotion might get even larger,
mm-hmm.
right? And then their instinct is to stay away.
Mm.
So leave them where they're at in a safe room, right? Because hopefully you've already prepared, like you're in a conference room or some quiet room with no windows.
Mm.
And then you just bring back 5 minutes later, because most people's adrenaline will subside in a couple minutes.
You've just reminded me of an event that I was actually witness to, and there was conflict, and the person, the leader did not handle it well, and the other person, it got to lunchtime and the other person never came back. I mean, literally never came back to work. They didn't just leave that session. They actually never came back. So you're reminding me that, yeah, like that escalated after that. But I mean, it wasn't just that thing. It obviously been going on for a while, but yeah, it would have been better to, yeah, there would have been a million things better, but yes, it can get worse and escalate, and then you're not in control of that environment to help them through that stage, mm-hmm. are you? Yeah. Any other tips and techniques before we move on to after? Tell us anything else about during then.
Sure. I guess there's two other small components that I would talk about, but really important components. And it's important to recognize I'm still sticking with difficult. So it's the uncomfortable. It's mm-hmm. the, right? That most solutions I would say probably all solutions have two components to it. There's the policy, practical component, which is the safe place that most of us go to, especially if we are including HR or legal into the conversation. They stay with, well, the policy is that you have to boom, 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 right? And that's the safest place for us to go, because I don't actually have to worry about emotion, because this is what the book says, right? Mm-hmm. This is what the rule book says.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at uncomfortable conversations around, somebody not getting a promotion or somebody not getting the performance review that they wanted, which are all, for me, still difficult conversations, right? It's like, well, there was like four candidates and only one could win, and unfortunately you lose, and that's the sort of the policy, driven response, where I don't actually have to take a lot of ownership over it.
Yeah.
But we have to recognize that there's always going to be an emotional, personal component to that conversation. So if I've gone in for a promotion, as an example, and I know that there's three other people and you're my boss and you have to make the decision, but now you have to tell me that I didn't get the job, right? You sticking with policy is great because it gives you an easy out, but it's probably most important for our relationship and for me to continue being a really excellent employee. Right. So my own productivity, my own loyalty into the company, into the team. If you also recognize that there's an emotional component to me not getting the job.
Mm.
So what does that mean for me? Like, do I feel like I'm now unworthy? Do I feel that I can't bring my kids to a private school? Does it mean that that cottage that I was hoping for is now out of reach, mm-hmm. right? And I have to go home and tell my partner that they've married somebody who's not worthy of them. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. There might be a huge amount, yeah. right? This big monkey.
Yeah,
right?
A giant gorilla there coming on.
Yeah. So yeah, no, there right. might be things going on with me. Like, so the promotion itself,
yeah,
small scale, my emotional impact, huge.
What it means,
scale,
what it means.
Right.
It
means. Yeah, yeah. So staying open, and as and you're my boss, you don't have to deal with all of those things, but recognizing that I might be managing all of those things mm-hmm. during this conversation is important.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. And again, you don't have to manage them for me, but recognize that I might be dealing with a lot of baggage that is indirectly associated with me not getting that promotion.
Mm.
And I think that is really an important aspect, that there's always going to be two components to a conversation.
Sure.
Right? The practical mm. and the emotional.
Mm. Mm.
And we're really good at dealing with the practical.
And it's the emotional that is the biggest deal.
That the emotional is what's yeah. going to keep you and I engaged tomorrow. Yeah.
Fantastic. And you said there was a second thing you wanted to tell us about as well. What's the second thing?
So the second thing is, be really aware of what your first sentence is going to be. So practice your first sentence.
Mm.
You don't have to practice much else as long as you're prepared on what's going on. But if I'm not getting the job and you're my boss, know very clearly what your first sentence is going to be.
Mm.
Right? Because your first sentence is going to set the tone for that meeting. And it will either keep me engaged or make me want to run from the room, right? Or put up barriers,
mm-hmm.
right? So your first sentence being, hey, Bruce, this is a really important conversation for me because you are an excellent member of our team.
Ooh, right? I feel nice now, yeah.
right? So you're opening up that and creating a space where Bruce feels safe, but you're also allowing some space for, this is not going to be a great conversation for you, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're a member of our team and you're really important, but things don't, like, but we only have one position that we can move forward. That said, Bruce, I want to look at how we can expand your experience so that next year, as another opportunity comes available, that you're better prepared for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And if that's your opening,
mm-hmm.
right? If that's your beginning,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, you're important, you didn't get the job, but I'm here to help you get better so that you have a better shot at your next opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to take care of that practical and the emotional.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Or at least start beginning to take care of those components.
Yeah. I mean, this is a different topic, but I teach a lot of presentation skills and I use a SAS structure, Simply Amazing Structure. And I talk about the little intro and the why at the beginning. Why do you want to listen to me? Or why do you want to go through this difficult conversation, as being very short, but very important. It sounds like that's linking up directly into your first sentence, like giving you motivation to stay in the game of this mm-hmm. difficult conversation. So the Simply Amazing structure would fit this conversation very well, as long as you include emotional as well as practical. That's fantastic.
It sounds like it, yeah.
I've got a question that's come up. I had a mentoring client, executive coaching client, and we were talking about difficult conversations, actually. And they found it difficult to have difficult conversations, as most of us do. And I said, it's okay to say that at the beginning, because your body language is going to be, can't all be as calm as a cool as a cucumber like you look like when you're saying it, Bruce. And if we're being a bit panicky when we're trying to have this, I felt that it was good to open up and be honest that this is actually a difficult conversation for me to have.
Mm-hmm.
And you would see that anyway through my body language. So I may as well name it. Do you agree that that's the right thing to do?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As long as you're not trying to use it in order to gain empathy for yourself, right?
No.
So, yeah. So as long as you're not turning, oh, I'm firing you, but this is really hard on me.
Right? That sounds like a comedy sketch. No, right? More like to explain why you're looking a bit dodgy and shifty is because you're feeling a bit shifty, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Owning up that, hey, this isn't my best moment. And I'm not always, I'm going to make a mistake in the next 10 minutes, right? And I really apologize for it. But our conversation and you are really important to me. And that's why I'm having this conversation with you. Oh, yeah. Like that's full honesty and transparency. And anytime that I can be honest and transparent is a good starting ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're kind of towards the end. Let's tell us about afterwards. Is there anything important? We've survived the difficult conversation. Yay! We both survived. In fact, we both flourished from it. Tell us what happens afterwards. Are there any key things we need to do?
Sure. I would say, you know, whether it's a day or 2 days, it depends on your environment. It depends on what's going on with work. But I'd say a day or two after, point to that conversation. Right. So going in and saying, hey, Dee, I'm really glad that you and I had that conversation yesterday about that meeting. And I've been reflecting on it. And I'm just really so happy that we were able to, you know, disagree and talk about what was important to us and figure out a way forward. Mm. And I just want to really thank you for being part of that. It was amazing. And have a great day. High five, out you go, right?
Oh, that's not very British, but yes, thank you.
Sorry. I'm on the other side of the...
Where you're calling in from when we're speaking. Where are you from, Bruce?
I'm from Toronto, Ontario in Canada. So, yeah,
here now we get it. Now we get it. thank you. So you say that. Would you ever ask them, do you think they'll put more pressure on them if you go, well, did you enjoy it as well? Or not enjoy it, but did you find it useful? Or you leave it just at thanking you, because otherwise maybe I put too much pressure on it. It feels like another conversation now.
Yeah, I would just thank them. I would just thank them. You know, and that might be a complete surprise, mm-hmm. you know, especially if difficult conversations are new for us, right? That might be a big surprise for them. They might come back a day later or 5 minutes later or in that moment and say, you know what, Bruce, it was really important for me as well. Mm-hmm. You know, that was great. Let them come back at their own pace or not come back at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But just doing that. Now, if the conversation was more strategically important, right, if it was a bigger issue that we had to work through, it might be one of the good things about coming back to it a day or two later, or if it was a policy issue that you had to come back to, I would say you do two things. One, I would say in person, say, hey, you know, Bruce, really glad that we had that conversation. It was really important to me. I'm glad that we settled in on step one, step two, step three. Mm-hmm. But if it was really important, then I would actually follow that up in an email and say, you know, hey, Bruce, just to stay on the same page, this was really important. Here's what we agreed, how we would move forward, and what the timeline is. Because it's... For strategic stuff, it's important that we really set the new foundation, especially mm-hmm. if you're creating a new approach forward where, you know, you've just corrected the way that I do things. It's good that we follow that up with, so now that we're clear, A and then B and then C.
Mm. Awesome. And some of the personality styles prefer things in writing, so they might have found that conversation, they couldn't process everything, they can't reflect on it because it's not written down. So exactly, you can come back to that. And that's really useful. Thank you. I've gone all sorts of other places, but I think we've run out of time. I can't go asking you that, or this will be an hour long interview. Brilliant.
But we can come back.
Yeah, please do. When people want to know a bit more about this, you've written a book. Have you got it with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
The Path of an Inspired Leader. That's fantastic. So presumably we can get that on Amazon and all other good bookshops.
Absolutely. Yeah, Amazon, Indigo, Barnes & Noble. But for you guys, it would be, I guess, Amazon would be your best approach.
Yeah. Brilliant. Fantastic. Yeah. And there's a couple of chapters in there about difficult conversations. Yes. And I like it. Every chapter has a different kind of theme, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I wrote the book. Now, when I say the path of an inspired leader, it's not me, the inspired leader. It's you, the inspired leader. So it's your path. And I see everybody's path as being unique. It'll all depend on your own personality and approach. So it's their path. But what I wanted to do was create one space sort of as a resource, as a pocket coach, if you will, that if a leader is running into, how do I hire someone? Like somebody just quit and I have to hire someone. I've never hired someone before, or I've hired somebody before and it's gone badly. How do I do it well? Mm-hmm. So there's a chapter on hiring. There's a chapter on onboarding. There's a chapter on creating a values statement for your team. There's a chapter on email etiquette. So there's all of these different scenarios that leaders find themselves in. That's what the book is all about. Mm-hmm. So it's one sort of voice and one perspective, but how do you deal with all of these different situations? And it allows, like, I think the longest chapter, I think, is 12 pages. So it's really designed to give people a really fast mm-hmm. look at how do I be excellent doing this thing, and then allow them to put their own spin, their own personality, their own leadership style onto that spin. Mm. That's how I designed it.
Fantastic. And difficult conversations was so important. You had to do two chapters on it.
Two chapters. Yeah. Every chapter is one topic, except difficult conversations ended up being two chapters.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That shows the importance of it. Thank you so much. That's brilliant. We really appreciate your time today. And we've really just scratched the surface. But if you want to read more, you can have a look at your book. And is there anywhere else we can go for more on this? You've probably got some blogs and...
Sure. Yeah, my website, brucemayhew.com, M-A-Y-H-E-W, well, it's written on the screen, brucemayhew.com. There's a blog section there. There's a leadership section that has all kinds of articles that I've written over the many, many years about all of the topics that I mm-hmm. that I talk about.
Right.
So that's a great place to go. Or you can find me on LinkedIn.
Lovely. Well, we're already connected on LinkedIn, so they can find you through my network on LinkedIn. Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time today. Take care.
It's been amazing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Bruce. That was a great conversation today. I keep thinking that this is something that leaders really need to do. And if you just keep avoiding it, it's only going to get worse. So think of one thing that happened from the show today that you think you can implement and test it out this week. Because the cost of staying silent is always going to be higher than the cost of speaking up, right? So thanks for listening to The Debrief Show. We really appreciate you joining us today. You'll find more information in the show notes. And if you want to listen to more of our episodes, you'll find us on Apple, Spotify, or on YouTube. Just search for The Debrief Show with Dee Clayton. If you've enjoyed today's conversation, please do share it with someone else, share it with a colleague or a friend, or anyone else who might find it helpful. And until next time, keep bringing out the best in yourself, your teams, and your communications.